attending the funeral and getting around to various meetings. I know you want to do the right thing as a police commissioner, so I hope you continue those rounds and being out there and listening. And also to the council again, and Commissioner Leonard, who's not in the room at the moment, but I want to thank him for his efforts with the IPR director and the city auditor and their staffs around this step of reform. As a member of the Albina Ministerial Alliance, you've heard that this proposed action that you're considering is just one in a long series of reforms that is needed in the city. And so I hope this is seen only as a first step. As a pastor of a congregation in Portland, a large multicultural, multinational congregation called to work for justice and peace and be inclusive of all people, I pray that we can overcome a day that we are in when it is such a tragedy that young people, especially young people from the major ethnic communities, African American, Native American, Latino, Asian, and others, feel fearful and are taught how to respond to police stops, including my own son. I can tell you how those conversations go when you prepare a young person, especially when the reactions that they often read about in the paper are sharpshooters getting to the scene before mental health experts, a 12-year-old girl who was thrown to the ground by three men twice her size, one carrying a shotgun. She didn't know there was only beanbags in it. But to be assaulted in that way, and yet she is the one that is convicted in court of a crime just over a week ago. I could go on with the list. But I do want to say, I think we are at a time in our city that there are, and we know there are many police officers who are exemplary in this city. But like any professions, there are those who are not cut out for it. But the issue goes much deeper. Every institution has a culture and a purpose. Beginning with this action and subsequent ones in the coming months, it is essential that we address the issues of fear both in our community and in the police force. Real and substantial fear and distrust of those charged with assisting citizens is not the way to carry out police work. To make decisions around the use of force, whether it be deadly force or any kind of force, based on fear for oneself is not the way to run a police force in this city. The culture must change for those who are in public service, and that goes to deep-seated reforms, and this is one step in that direction. The use of deadly force is serious. The use of training is serious. The use of who is recruited to be police officers. I would pray that courage, communications, and civic engagement would supersede the watchwords of fear and force in our community. I encourage you to be bold as public servants and begin moving this ordinance forward as the first step towards major reform, the beginning of some sense of healing and hope in our community, and the renewal of trust among citizens and those who are asked to serve the community in the police force. For to do anything less would be a disservice to all. We are, of course, all in this together. No one is an island. No one stands alone. We are all part of the main. So I hope you move forward with this and then continue this work, especially in the next 90 days and in the months to come. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Pastor. Mr. Jama.
Good afternoon, Mayor Sam Adams and commissioners. My name is Casey Chama. First of all, I want to thank Commissioner Leonard for putting forward this proposal in front of us today. And also, I applaud you, all of you as a city leaders, just taking this very difficult issue. And I understand that this is a very, very challenging issue in our community. Before I start my proposal, testimony. I want to share with you quickly the history of a woman that I work with. About a year and a half ago, I got a call from a Somali woman who her son was in jail. I was out of town at the time, and when she called me, my cell phone was not, I wasn't able to access my cell phone. Upon my returning from my trip, there was many, many messages in my cell phone, and I immediately called back. I asked her what was going on with her life. And she told me this story. She said, basically, her son has some mental issues. About in the morning, early in the morning, he was starting having some episodes. She immediately called the police. And mind you, this woman has a very limited English speaking ability. She called the police. The police showed up. The son was closed himself in the bathroom. The police immediately entered the house. They tasered the son, immediately put him in handcuffs while naked, and take him to the central jail and put him in jail. She did not know what was going on. She said, "I called them to help my son. I called them to help my son." She didn't know the procedures that in order to have a bail for her son. So that is kind of a situation is that in the community that we are dealing with. I want to also emphasize that we're not trying to vilify our police force. There are so many wonderful police officers who are doing a great job. What we're trying to do is to find a fair policy between law enforcement and community policing. That's really the heart of this issue. Having said that, I think Sam Adams, you earlier asked the question, what is the success means to IPR? And I want to tangle a little bit that question. First, all of us, those who are in management positions, we know that we evaluate projects in two points of view. One, did it make this call that has been forced first? Secondly, did it have the impact and quantitative-wise that we needed? So qualitative-wise and quantitative-wise. Those are the two points of view. So we need to keep in mind that the real work begins when we pass this proposal, and the only way we can evaluate the success of this IPR proposal is that whether it has a fair, balanced caseload is that it's all the community and the police sees as a fair balance that has an outcome. The secondly, I want to quickly mention that I think there has been proposed amendment to the community organizations and the other organizations that have been proposed to be as a stakeholders. I want to quickly ask the county commissioners to put also another amendment to make sure that there is representation for the immigrant and refugee community, because there is a cultural and language issues that we need to consider as we are looking at these issues holistically. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Jama. Appreciate it. Mr. Nichols.
Hello, I'm Walt Nichols. Sure, Nick Fish, I left my campaign stuff in the car. I'm here as a citizen and as president
welcome
of the
Welcome you in any capacity.
Well, I just don't want that to be an issue, because don't look at what I'm saying as a political move, because I don't. I mean this as chair of the Neighborhood Association, an active member in the Citizens Advisory Committee with East Precinct, involved with Southeast Precinct, and with the East Precinct community meetings that happen every month. We really need to do things to restore the trust in the police. I had one neighbor that said to me, maybe the reason that the crime stats look down is because people are not calling the police, and that's a big concern. We need to implement this today. I know Amanda wants to stall, but somebody said to me, one of their neighbors said to me, would you bring up the fact that maybe she's stalling because she wants to get rid of Nick and Dan? You know, and I said, I don't think that's the case.
Hadn't thought of that.
Well, maybe, I'm forestalling this a little bit myself. I wish
you hadn't mentioned that.
But anyway.
Maybe we should wait till next summer sometime.
But no, we really, really do need to get this passed. We need, and the thing is, Dan, Rosie put Ronald Freshour as my nerd officer, and when you've worked hard to be a community volunteer with community policing and you get slapped in the face with somebody that has a questionable situation, I know it's tough, you don't know what to do with him, but it just destroys everything. And we need to fund community policing, and I know budgets are tight, but there's a lot of things that wouldn't be happening if we had the one-on-one relations. There's a lot of really good officers out there, and there's just a few that can sour the whole bucket. And it's really important that this gets addressed. Thank you.
Thank you all very much for your testimony. Carla, how many do we have left?
We have about 24 more left.
24 left?
Next right. Three are Norman Porter, Will Atchison, and Lou Hall.
Forum, had I been invited to. No.
About Dr. Hardy?
In place of?
I'm not sure. I know Norman's here. Will Atchison? Is that you?
Here?
Thank you.
Okay. Mr.
Atchison. Lou Hall isn't here. Is Dr. Hardy here? Okay, he's coming. And they'll be followed by Mike O'Callaghan, Leo Rhodes, and Skipper Osborne.
Mr. Porter, welcome. Thanks for your patience.
Yes, my name is Norman Porter, and I have some concern. I'm a concerned citizen. And when we have meetings like this, are you really concerned about what we're concerned about? Or are you in your chambers you know, they already made a decision before coming here and having us think, are you really concerned about our concerns? You know, and these are the kind of things that I look at, you know, and when you see police officers getting vacation, a police officer getting a vacation, I won't mention no name because there's no time to go through all that, but, you know, after shooting someone, then they get a paid vacation out of that, you know, and then you find a decision, and then you find another officer, you know, a decision has already been made that he's going back to work after shooting Aaron Campbell. You know, everyone going into their chambers, you know, and making decisions before coming to these kind of sessions, you know, and I heard, and I can't remember who said it, but I've heard that it was said that we consider, you know, the proposal that went up, that Pastor Haynes had brought up, is that considered decision, or is it a decision that's already been made? You know, before coming here, knowing what you're already going to do. You know, I don't believe in nothing said, you know, until it happens. You know, action speaks louder than words. And I've heard many, many words being said and nothing being done. You know, and I'm a citizen. And I'm tired of, you know, policemen, you know, I'm murdering people and didn't get any away with it. And, you know, when a citizen, you know, does the same thing an officer does, they get handcuffed and go to jail. You know, officers that, you know, do the shooting, they're back on the job the next day. You know, and I'm saying is that this needs to stop. You know, and you know, our elected officials, you know, are being paid by tax dollars from the people that are being forced out of them, you know, to pay your salary. And we're being treated like animals. Aaron Campbell was left there to bleed for 30 minutes, you know, and then handcuffed, and then dog went and bit him. You know, dogs, animals being, you know, treated better than what Aaron Campbell, how he got treated. And Aaron Campbell's mother and some of the others, they're not able to go home and see their children. You know, like some of you guys have children that you can come home to each and every day. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Atchison.
Thank you. Members of the council, my name is Will Atchison. I'm a Portland resident. I'm here, though, in a different capacity. I am the attorney for the Portland Police Association. And also, in the interest of full disclosure, I represent the association in collective bargaining that is ongoing with all four of you, all five of you, excuse me. I am here primarily to talk about process. I'm not here to talk about the collective bargaining process, although what you are considering would be one of the most fundamental breaches of the collective bargaining laws that one could countenance. I am not here talking about the process called for by the ordinance, although it is clearly unconstitutional in at least two separate measures and contradictory in other. I am not here to talk about the legislative process, although I could ask questions of you, questions such as, where are ordinances like this in use elsewhere? What has been the experience in those communities? Are there other forms of oversight that are more or less effective than what is being proposed? What does this cost? Those seem to me to all be legitimate questions that arise out of your function as legislators. Instead, I want to talk about something else, the process of you dealing with your employees. In the last few weeks, we've seen numerous proposals coming from various of you, not all of you, various of you, that impact the Portland Police Bureau and its police officers. Those proposals include major change in the civilian oversight process, major change in the disciplinary process, changes in how officers who've been involved in critical incidents are treated, even a proposal to arm Water Bureau employees. We have seen for the first time ever the city take the position that a grand jury transcript should be released to the public. And we have seen for the first time ever you take the position that you will not talk to us in collective bargaining negotiations unless those sessions are public. There is a common thread through all of those, and that thread is that not one of those actions was preceded by dialogue with your employees, with the Portland Police Association. We can recall a city government. I've represented this association 31 years. We can recall a city government that valued input from its employees, that treated them as stakeholders in a process. We can recall your Bureau of Human Resources saying that what the city values most are its employees and values their input. We hope those aren't things in the past. Working together, we have made major changes in the police bureau. The IPR.
So I need you to summarize.
Well, that's a little difficult. But what we are asking, Mayor, is that you involve us in this process before you move down a road that is precipitous. You're the leaders of the whole community, and you are the leaders of your workforce.
Thank you for your testimony.
Mr. Mayor, just to clarify one point, Will testified to a lot of points in labor law. I have a lot of respect for Will. I've worked and known with Will for close to 30 years. But just factually, I did meet with Scott Westerman, the president of the Police Association, as I was crafting this ordinance. We talked for over an hour in developing what his concerns were, me telling him what my concerns were, and that was reflected in what this ordinance looks like finally. I do agree a major failure is if we don't include employees in discussions, and I did do that. Second point, the latest issue of the rap sheet does nothing to encourage those discussions when the official publication of the rap sheet characterizes the IPR as the Gestapo. And it did nothing to encourage me to want to have further discussions. Having said that, I talked to the union president after that was published, and he told me that was not something he authorized, and he apologized for it, which I accept. But I think the communications are a two-way street. Responsibility is a two-way street.
May I respond, Mayor?
Please.
Thank you, Commissioner. We did not see a copy of this ordinance until it was released to the public.
That's different than not having talked to him.
This is a complicated piece of legislation that has a lot of moving parts. I like to think that you would think that the input of 900 men and women on the Portland Police Bureau would matter on this issue in the process of crafting the legislation. And with respect to the rap sheet, we publish a newspaper, and occasionally people will say something in a newspaper or a blog that they regret. And we certainly regret that comment.
Thank you.
And I would just say that in 2005, as a newly elected member of the Portland City Council, I proposed as a legislative priority in the state legislature that we support a bill that an officer-involved shootings, that a transcript would be taken and made public at the end of those proceedings. And I was unable to make it get support at the time to make it a council priority, but I did go down myself and testify. And during my endorsement interview with the Portland Police Association, I believe we discussed that issue, and I reiterated my support for it. So I just also wanted to note that for the record. Pastor Hardy.
Thank you. Mayor Sam Adams, commissioners, I too want to commend Commissioner Randy Leonard for his championing this ordinance. As we take a look at what we're talking about here today, talking about the urgency of the matter, voting on this today, I'm trusting that each of you commissioners are listening to the testimony before deciding on what you're going to vote. I trust that because that's what you promised when you came to the community and asked for our support to get you in office. What I hear today, with some of the opposition, 31 years of representing and not including the employees, we're talking about an order, a way of doing business that involves communicating. But unfortunately, we have put order over justice. Sometimes, in order to do justice, one has to do things out of order. We have to step in, make decisions. Yes, you could wait for more time, get more information so that we can make sure that we're proceeding in order. But the time is now to do something. The police department, they have attorneys to defend them. They have a union to represent them. They have a badge to stand behind. And they have a gun to protect them. The citizens will only have this ordinance that has some subpoena power, some bite. I say to you here and now, no one should be intimidated by the truth. And if the Independent Police Review Board does its investigation, the only thing they can come up with is the truth. And if it matches the truth that the internal investigation has done, then it's a collaboration. But if things are disclosed, then we can collaboratively address them. So I plead with you, please, today, be courageous. Do the right thing on behalf of the citizens and, again, the police department in the long run. Vote for this ordinance. Thank you.
Pastor, thank you all for your testimony.
Pastor Hardy, may I just ask you a question?
Yes, ma'am.
I just saw this ordinance when it was came to the public. And last week, I asked Mayor Adams to defer voting on his $20 million for stormwater facilities for bike plans so that I could look that over more carefully. Don't you think I should look this over carefully? Don't you think that this is more important than bicycle funding?
I think it's very important, and thank you for the question. This is a long-standing problem in the community that happened long before you took office. And you said you would listen to the citizens. We're here today. We're speaking in overwhelming representation, and for every voice standing here, there are hundreds in the community. I'm asking you today to believe in the community that's coming here. If we had more time, you would only hear more of this, but more time only gives the opposition an opportunity to build a defense.
You have a council, I think, who are all very committed to reform. And we've already heard from two groups who haven't felt that they've been here, that they haven't been adequately represented, the Latino Network and from the immigrant and refugee communities. Something that you all have taught me in looking around when I'm in meetings is who's not here. And so I recognize that you're here, that this is hugely important. It's hugely important to me. It's hugely important that we do something, that we do it right, and that we do something that is defensible and that is implementable. And so that's the only question that I have is this implementable? And I want specifically to know from later testifiers, what's in it? What do you like? What do you not like? Because to me, this is hugely important.
Yes. Can I respond to that, please?
Yes.
Thank you. When I helped to engineer the light rail system, we asked the same question. When that train is rolling down on the east side, what happens if a customer still wants to get on and you see one on the platform and the instructions were keep the train moving because another one's coming right behind? I believe if you vote for this, in favor of this, we're still going to be looking at this, reviewing this, and critiquing this. But to give it more time and wait for more representation, I think is a waste.
Thank you all very much for your testimony. Really appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Porter.
Next three are Mike O'Callaghan, Leo Rhodes, and Skipper Osborne. They'll be followed by Woody Broadnax, Xavier Allen, and Calvin Moody.
Welcome to the City Council. We're glad you're here. Mr. O'Callaghan.
Thank you, Michael O'Callaghan. I applaud your efforts. Boy, you got them, brother. Okay. I appreciate, Sam, your comments about what this leads to. Basically, what you're doing is you're empowering the IPR to report to a board that can or cannot follow whatever the recommendations are. So basically, it's pretty much toothless. Now, from my perspective, I'm testified to you before a number of times. Okay, there's a war going on out there. I was voluntarily homeless for a few days. Actually, months. But anyway, my first 13 days on the street, I had 16 contacts with officers. Okay, in the war that's going on, one side has clubs, guns, tasers. The other side just has their bodies, okay? And they're being swept every night, and they're being woken up all the time with no authority of law. But anyway, I took an issue I had to IPR, and that's what this package is that I gave to you. Okay, and I just kind of do this stuff for entertainment for me. Okay, now the IPR gave me a letter on the 21st in which they cited the camping code. I wasn't cited for violating the camping code. I don't know why they put that in the letter. The letter didn't identify the officers that they'd investigated, which I found a great shortcoming. And it was factually incorrect in all things except the date, Portland Police Department. Okay. Then I went four times with meetings with people at IPR, and finally, after sending a letter to the city auditor, I got a response from IPR on January 6th. Again, all the facts were incorrect, except the date and Portland Police Department. So I found that process to be a shortcoming. Also, they gave me no notice of my appeal rights, which they're supposed to do. I think the Independent Review Board should be totally fired. I think every one of them should be fired. If they can't even get the facts right in an investigation, how can they do an investigation? And I certainly support your efforts to expand their powers, but they need to be removed because they don't have an adequate capacity to investigate a very minor incident. So, a few things I would like to see. I would like to see the number of police that were military. I would like to see the number of police that were in combat in the military. I'd like to see the number of police in combat in the military that are involved in shootings. Okay, we have some seriously PTSD people out there, and the union isn't willing to weed them out. Okay, and I really have high doubts as to whether, if this ordinance is passed, there will be any substantive change in what I encounter on the streets. But I certainly thank you for the efforts, and I certainly thank the community behind me for coming forward and saying this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. O'Callaghan. Sir?
Yes, thank you. I'd like to thank you for having me speak here today. I would like to say that this is a great start. It's long and time needed. There's too many deaths out there, too much violence and stuff out there. I've talked to you before about the profiling that's been done upon me and my friends out there. The gun that was pulled while I was sleeping on the max, good thing I woke up, otherwise I would have been a statistic. The 2 hours that I had talked to a female officer explaining that not all homeless people are criminals. I mean, these are the police out there. There are good ones out there, but I run into a lot of this. And when I talk to these individuals, these police officers, I ask them, you know, what's going on here? Why do this? And they all say the same thing. We have to put you all in the same boat. So even though I am clean and sober, I'm still a druggie, and I'm still mentally ill. Even though I'm a native or homeless, I'm still a drunk. You know, that shouldn't be right. That's not the way to have a police officer look at you. But that's what happens out there right now. The use of deadly force. Yeah, I was in the military. I was an infantryman. And one of the things is when we went out there and we were going to use that, we were always cited that. We had to recite that. We had to learn that. And in these incidences that I see, the use of deadly force, I mean, you know, that would have been a court-martial, a lot of these things. Really, a court-martial. I mean, these things are really ridiculous. And, I mean, I feel really, oh, man, I just can't, there's no words to put how I feel about that. The accountability, we need that strong accountability to these things. You're losing a lot of faith in the the community by not having these accountabilities, people going back to the office or sitting behind a desk and then all of a sudden out on patrol again. You know, I mean, you know, one of the things is I am and try to be a law-abiding citizen, you know, but there are still things that, like I said, I'm being profiled out there. So I am nervous when I get around police officers. I have no need to be, but yet I still am. And that shouldn't be the way it is. That's the way it is out there. But, you know, we need to turn this around. Right here I have this paper, and I'd like to say that I endorse all of these five things. I'll give you a copy of this because, you know, this is needed. Training is needed on that, the use of deadly force. You know, and also profiling. You got to teach your officers that not everybody is out there to harm them. There are law-abiding citizens that are willing to work with them. But like you heard before, there are people that just don't want to because they're scared. So thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Lipper.
Mayor Adams, Commissioner Amanda Fritz, Commissioner Leonard. Commissioner Leonard, I want to thank you for...
And I'm sorry, for the record, you have to state...
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Skipper Osborne, former president of Portland Branch NAACP and current founder and CEO of Today for Truth and Justice for All, a civil rights organization. I want to commend you for putting this together. Time is of the essence. This ordinance needs to be passed, and it needs to be passed now. Too often when it comes down to serious things, especially when it deals with African American people of color and the poor and disenfranchised, it is always put on the back burner. Let us debate it. Let us discuss it more. Let us do this with it. Let us do that with it. It is time to make a change. I applaud the grand jury for sending the note in reference to some accountability that the police officers should have been held to. Notwithstanding, whenever they make a decision, it is always a decision in favor of the police department. Why could not they have sent that same letter, but in defense of Mr. Campbell? And likewise, with this ordinance, in defense of all the blood that has been shed by the people, Chase, Aaron Campbell, Kendra James, why does more blood have to be shed to wait to discuss something more that is so vital? I do not want to hear anything about what it's going to cost. Just for the few things that the city have paid, $900,000 in one case, $150,000 in another, $140,000 in another. We over $1 million. And the IP, the board, can be funded. What is more important? This was, question was to Mr. Commissioner Fish. What is more important, a human life or the budgetary process on where this money is going to go? It is time for the elected officials to stand behind a commissioner who dared to make a difference. Not for political office, but for the people, for we the people of the community of Portland, Oregon. We the people, and of all the hands that were being raised time and time again, the people have basically said, please vote to all you elected officials. Please vote, and vote now on this ordinance.
Thank you, sir.
Mayor, may I just, Mr. Osborne?
Yes, ma'am.
I just wanted to clarify the intent of Commissioner Fish's question and mine on the cost. It wasn't, this isn't worth it. It's, we need to make sure that it's in the budget. So we're currently doing our budgeting. So if it was going to require any particular funding, we want to make sure that it goes into the budget and is funded. Not, we weren't asking that question because we thought it would be too expensive. I agree with you that the cost of a human life is incalculable.
I beg you to put it in the budget.
Thank you all very much for your testimony.
Really? The next three are Woody Broadnax, Xavier Allen, and Calvin Moody. They will be followed by Ron Bead, Delise Carter, and Jenna Frazzini.
Good afternoon. Thanks for waiting. We're glad you're here.
Good afternoon.
So, did you call the next name on the list?
I call him. How about Ron Bead?
Mr. Bead, please come forward.
And the next three will include Ed Guerin.
Great. So thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Would you like to begin?
Yes, my name is Woody Broadnax. Again, I want to echo what everyone else is saying. Randy, it's great. I'm going to come from a different perspective, and that perspective involves the union. We've recently met with Mr. Westerman at the African American breakfast. And from that breakfast, I felt intimidated. I felt threatened because he had taken a position in coming in and saying, before anyone said anything to him, was, "I know you all hate me." And that is not the type of acceptable behavior coming from someone representing a fraternal order such as this union. I personally feel that the union is behind a lot of the policies that not only exist today, but were created years ago when we had to be, when African Americans had to be off the street at 6 o'clock. A lot of that still goes on to this very day. And a lot of that is embedded in the culture of the police union. And I think that the only way that we're going to be able to combat that is that we follow Randy's example and start to produce a spirit that involves you and I of respect, responsibility, accountability, and productivity if we intend to have peace in this community. Because one of the things that's always said is no justice, no peace. Well, just the opposite of that. This community wants peace, wants to be at peace, and want to be able to call upon those officers when there is a need for them, but as it's been said, there are people saying, "I ain't calling the police." We need to revisit how we deal with one another, how we communicate with one another. And the only way that we can do it is by fostering those principles, not only in the police union, not only in the police, not only in the city council, not only in the community, but the workplace, at school, and everywhere else. If we're going to be successful in changing the dynamics of what has been going on and will continue to go on until we address this very serious issue, which Randy has created an ordinance, and I would expect, and I look at all of you as being respectful. I look at all of you as being responsible. I look at you as being accountable, and that is trustworthiness. Accountability is the ability to trust that something is going to be done. And without that accountability, there can be no productivity. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Hi.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. I'm going to make this short, sweet, and painless. My name is Xavier Allen. We are not looking for people that we elect into office to dance around the many questions that the people demand satisfactory answers to. We the people have many concerns about the direction in which the city of Portland is heading. Now, as cynical as this may sound, some of us did not find it surprising to turn on the television or open up our newspapers and learn about the shooting of four police officers in Tacoma, Washington, last November, by a lone gunman, apparently fed up with the conduct and or the results of a police investigation that typically ends with an officer receiving a 30-day paid vacation for his or her actions sanctioned by the city at the taxpayer's expense. The mayor, city council, and police chiefs in these cities across the nation seem to support and stand behind individuals in blue suits who call themselves law enforcement officers. Perhaps it is because city government is similar to an army. Without an army, the general has no power. And just as a general realizes that the power lies in the soldiers, city government must not forget their power lies in the people. We the people are your army. We give you power. We want you to use that power to do what's right. Approve this ordinance. Now, I have no crystal ball, nor am I a mind reader, nor do I possess the foresight of a prophet. However, if wearing a blue suit while carrying a gun and a badge somehow gives one the right to kill and as punishment receive a paid vacation, there will soon be more ordinary citizens adopting gang-like activities to arrive at what they call justice. We the people who pay the salaries of police officers, politicians, and the like, expect them to suit up on a daily basis with the intent on improving community relations and seek justice, J-U-S-T-I-C-E, not just us, J-U-S-T, us, people who look like me. We want justice for all, not just for some. Police need to be held accountable. The system is flawed, as we know, and we want changes and transparency within all organizations using taxpayers' dollars. So the question is, are you willing to make that change? Thank you.
Commissioners, my name is Ron Bead. Excuse me if I get a little forgetful. I do that when I get nervous, so bear with me.
No problem.
First, I'd like to commend Randy Leonard for proposing this ordinance. We members of Oregon Action met with most of you 7-8 months ago. At one of those meetings with Commissioner Sossman, we proposed that we have an ordinance. And Commissioner Sossman said, well, Portland Police Bureau will only lawyer up and they'll win. I'm hoping that's not going to be the case. Which is one more reason why we need to pass this today. It's not complicated. It's about accountability and transparency. Power corrupts. You know, there's a saying, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Well, unchecked power is power out of control, and we have no check on the Portland Police Bureau. I remember when the police officer beanbagged the girl here a few months ago, and Commissioner Sossman, it was no big deal. He just gave the officer some time off, I think it was. And the people backed the police bureau and had a rally downtown, and bam, he was right back behind a desk with his gun. So when you all took accountability, which is what I was asking the last time we met, it doesn't seem to have meant anything. An ordinance is what we need. We all know that. It's not a secret. The gentleman that was here, well, first the minister that was here, he spoke about fear and force. We don't need officers out there that fear us. We need officers that love us because it's our loved ones that they're supposed to be here to protect. And when they come out, they set Aaron Campbell up. He was set up. They call and ask for his rap sheet. Oh, here, we got an attempted murderer. Okay? There was no communication. They got a guy with an assault rifle. This guy's back, the Aaron Campbell, comes out on his own. And I heard an officer on OPB say, oh, he acted too quickly. How does he act too quickly? He comes out. They tell him, back down the stairs. He backs down the stairs. He's got his hands behind his head. They can see it. They can see his hands.
So I need you to summarize.
I understand. They can see it. So as far as I'm concerned, when they shot him with a beanbag for no apparent reason, and then because he reacted to the beanbag, he was set up. Yeah. Thank you.
Sam, we need a new day forward.
Carla?
next three are Ed Guerin, Shirley Nikost, and Kevin Howard. I'm sorry, hold on just a minute. I'm sorry, Delise Carter, Jenna Frazzini, and Ed Guerin are the next three. Sorry about that. And they'll be followed. Let's see. Delise Carter, Jenna Frazzini, and Ed Guerin.
Delise Carter, are you here? Doesn't look like it.
Ed Guerin. Let's go with Shirley Nikost.
Shirley Nikost.
Nikost, sorry. Then Mr. Howard.
Mr. Howard.
Come on up. Sorry. And they'll be followed by Willis Jones, David Regan, and Sylvia Zenzizer.
So we are glad that you're here, Ms. Frazzini.
Thank you. Mayor and council members, my name is Gina Frazzini. I have very little voice left, so forgive me. I'm going to keep this short and sweet. I'm the executive director of Basic Rights Oregon. I'm an almost 20-year resident of the city of Portland. I'm a mother of two young boys. In my role as executive director with Basic Rights Oregon, I uphold our mission to ensure that all lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender Oregonians experience equality every day with everything that I do. And I'm here today to support the proposal put forth by Commissioner Leonard. Portland's gay and transgender community is a community of many races, ethnicities, faiths, sexual orientations, and gender identities. We're a community that understands what it means at times to be fearful of the police. And we support the work of our allies, the AMA Coalition for Justice and Police Reform, and others in calling for significant changes in our community and a significant dialogue. And we believe that this ordinance is a very good step in the right direction. I would call it a good start, but I know that this work has been going on for years. The lived experience of LGBT people and people of color certainly have distinct histories and struggles, but our communities, and especially for LGBT people of color, are disproportionately impacted by laws, by institutions, and by systems that have excused crimes against us in the belief that we're somehow, that our identities somehow pose a threat or are less worthy of due process. The outcomes of our actions today and in our work moving forward will shape how all of our communities are policed and how we can keep ourselves and our loved ones safe. So I encourage you to take the vote today to approve the ordinance. There's much more work to be done. And there's what I understand within the discussion around this ordinance is that there's an opportunity to review and a process for doing so as it moves forward. And certainly that is the commitment of the community, as I understand it. And Basic Rights Oregon is committed to working as an ally in partnership with the African American community, with the AMA Coalition, with many others, in a long-term and sustained effort to engage the community in the dialogue, in building trust, which I think is clear that work needs to be done, and in making the necessary policy changes to create lasting change and really bring true justice to our community. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Mr. Guerin.
Thank you. Edward Ed Guerin, resident of Portland. Randy, I want to thank you for bringing this ordinance forward. It's long overdue. And it's a good first step in a process that also should include reviewing how officers are hired, the evaluations, for example, do we give them the MMPI? Do we give them some basic psychological tests to see whether or not they have issues that they're concealing from themselves or others? I would also suggest that in addition to drug testing, you need to do alcohol testing. And there are now tests available which can tell you if someone has consumed alcohol for 7 days prior. You also need to look at not just training, but the whole idea of collaboration, which is something we hear a lot from the police union. Now, I am also a member of a multiracial family, and part of that family includes law enforcement officers. So I do understand the stresses of the job, and in decreased funding, it lands right there. But I want to say that I grew up in segregation. I grew up in a world where people of color were afraid of the police, where there were pass laws, where there were covenants on property, where there was legalized and institutional segregation. And there was a clear order of who had power and who did not.
And we fought that battle 50 years ago in the Southeast. And I was very surprised when I moved to Oregon to find that 150 years ago, when we became a state, that the even larger vote on the ballot was the exclusion of people of color from the state. That this was a Jim Crow state until 1953. Now, for those of you who've never seen a Tyler Perry movie, Tyler Perry's character Medea says, "If it looks like a duck, walks like a duck, and quacks like a duck, Aflac." And I'm here to say, as a white person who has some privilege until I tell people I'm queer, and then that usually goes right out the door, that the unspoken word in this community is racism. And it's here, and it's big time. And we have all collaborated because one of the things we like to do is, if it's unpleasant, we just don't talk about it and hope that it goes away. Well, it hasn't. And this region is at least 30 years behind most of Alabama, Mississippi, and Georgia in having dialogue about racism and racial issues and all of the other horrific stuff that goes along with it. Now, I don't think people here intend to be racist, but you know, we need to look at this stuff because it's Aflac, folks, and it's us here in Portland, Oregon in 2010, and it's inexcusable. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Guerin. Mr. Howard.
My name is Kevin Howard. That's kind of funny, man.
You need a little humor to discuss these things, you know?
Yeah, somebody broke the ice. Randy, I got a chance to meet you for the first time. Never met you before, but I like what you're doing. When a woman is pregnant, it from what I told, is a very painful transition. Change is a very painful transition. There's a man up here said he's been on the bureau and he'd been working with the police department for 31 years and said that no change. It's got worse instead of better. I have two granddaughters, two beautiful granddaughters. I would love to see them be able to rip and run up and down the street and not worry about not so much of gang members, but the policeman's going to shoot my granddaughter because she might make the wrong move. I encourage you guys today to make that decision because it's very important. We elected you guys, put you in office. You know, I'm a taxpayer. I'm a businessman also. And I'm very concerned. See, and when I looked and first came in here, it was a building full of people, not just African-American, but it was all cultures that were sitting behind me. And the police department represent those people. I come from a family, my dad was a police officer. He walked the beat. So he knew the kids and the youngsters on his beat. Instead of pulling out his pistol, he would take that kid if he got in trouble and take him home to their parents. That was back in the old days. But today, it feels like it's almost like a police state or police community. And why should that be? Why should we pay our money for that kind of situation, which makes us uncomfortable, which makes us feel like, you know, fearful? Something has to be done. You know, tomorrow is a new day, but if tomorrow comes and another person gets shot, then what? Will it be the same situation over and over again? We got to come back here, sit and talk to you, eyes rolling in here, nobody's concerned, but it really is about the people. You represent people. You represent a community. And it's going to take guts for you to stand up and do what you know is right, not by constituency or agency. It's about doing right by the people. We need to have something to feel comfortable that you guys is representing us properly. And that's what's important to us. We don't want no more killing. And we do want to get along with the police. We want to know our police officer that comes in our community. That's important to us. But we want to know if we're being protected, so not being killed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Howard. Thank you all very much. How many more?
Nine more.
Nine more.
Next three are, I believe it's Willis Jones, David Regan, and Sylvia Zingeiser.
Sylvia Zingeiser, is that right?
Go ahead and have a seat.
This one.
Willie Jones.
Southern baby. Don't worry about it. It ain't important. Okay.
And they'll be followed by Ibrahim Mubarak, Greg Kafori, and Marsha Myers.
Mr. Jones, welcome.
Thank you, Mayor.
Please begin.
My name is Willie Jones. A lot of you guys here are in my community, and you know me. My concern is we're settling down for the long haul on these things, and we're changing a lot of rules that we don't need to change. We should enforce the rules that's already on the book. Save ourselves some time. There are certain things that's cut and dry. Done deal. You know, this kid didn't have a weapon. They didn't have to die. You know, just talking about this particular case. You know, these things don't have to happen. You know, we could do something about this right now without implementing all these instructions and waiting all this time down the road to get this done. And I think, well, we're being conditioned to settle for the long haul. I'm done.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Mr. Regan.
Brevity. That's a hard act to follow. I'm David Regan. Some people have suggested that Randy Leonard's getting even with y'all by insisting on a vote today. He doesn't like Dan. He doesn't like Nick. Doesn't like, but he does know police, and he is correct that they are going to mount a big defense and get you all in back rooms. And, Dan, you need to kick ass, not sit there like some passive pets. And until you hand it over back to the mayor or somebody else takes it from you, you have a duty, sir. It's part of your sworn oath of office to protect the constitutional rights of these citizens. And I'm also done.
Hi, my name is Sylvia Zingeiser, and I'm a member of the National Alliance on Mental Illness for Multnomah. And I have a son who's mentally ill. I did, a number of years ago, had a suicide call, and the Portland police were called in, and he was ultimately beat up and in ICU overnight because they thought he had a hematoma on the brain. And that's how I came to, I contacted NAMI, as the acronym is for National Alliance on Mental Illness, and it was suggested that I join the Crisis Intervention Training Advisory Board to the Portland Police, which I've been on that board for a long time now. It's about 6 years. So I've watched all these things happen, and what things seem to keep getting worse instead of better. We haven't solved the problem. I don't understand how, when these things happen, that the officers work under a situation of being correct, having acted correctly 100% of the time. And I don't know of any business or any organization such as airlines, transportation, manufacturing. I work in the medical field. We're all held accountable when we mess up or we screw up or we make a bad decision or we made a decision that we had to make at the last minute. And we used our discretion, and we're still held accountable. The only way I know to help the Portland Police Department is to offer them a quality assurance program where they can actually measure the output of what they do, the outcome of the work that they do, so that when they go back and they look at what they're doing, they can see their outliers. And unfortunately, their outliers in this case are people who die. So I wish that Chief Sizer were here. She's not. I would like to see you go ahead and vote for this. I know that I'm afraid that if you wait, there will be longer time before we can manage to get another vote and make something happen. And I know that you're going to be able to add to this and review it and hone it down. Improve it, the ordinance. What can I say? We need your support.
Thanks for your testimony.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
Next three are Greg Cafori, Marsha Myers, and Joe Smith.